Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Happy Friday. I hope you all had a great week. And I hope you're all looking forward to an even better weekend, as always. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. It's another TGIBF, and it's ready to go, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. Thank God it's Friday for sure. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, that's just the way it goes. You know, it's we got a nice board. And we got, I think I have like 8 SoundClouds. We're in good shape. It would be nice. But, nice. Yeah, so anyway, how was your week? Was it good?
Yeah, a lot of, I got another bonfire to burn tomorrow. So there's plenty of stuff picking up.
Well, that's kind of nice. Bonfires can be kind of cool.
That first one the other night had a nice 10-foot flame on it for a while, and it burned all night long.
Did it really? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I had
a couple of
healthy oak logs on the fire.
Oh, that's nice. That's real nice. Yeah, it's really super if it's there's a little bit of a coolness in the air, a little crisp or something. That would be better for me. You know, in the heat, I don't want to be anywhere near it. But it's functional.
Well, the Knights are up in 55, so the 5 was uptick in temp, so.
Yeah, that's great. 55 is great temp for that stuff. You know, I don't know. I think the last I heard it was like 102 a year house. I'm just kidding. But, you know, you had some really nice warm days. We have not, we've been down in the 50s, like high 60, you know, nothing above 60 for like a few days now. So I totally get it. That'd be,
we've had temperate weather, mid 70s.
Yeah.
Right now it's 60. And we haven't hit any really hot, and we should have already, but it's been really nice.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's usually what we have. Like, for some reason, we're like bordering between, you know, our normal spring and like, you know, early spring, like the beginning, because it's usually not that cool now. Usually we're hitting like in the 60s and staying in around there, but I don't know. Mother Nature's like saying, I don't think so. Pennsylvania needs to cool off a little bit. Like, okay, whatever. But, I don't know. I just shake my head and say, whatever. But anyway, yeah. So, I'm looking forward to tonight. It should be good. And tonight we have two callers so far. We have Pam. And hello, Pam, and welcome to the party.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hey, Pam.
All right.
Hi, Rick.
How goes it?
So far, so good.
Very cool. Are you still in winter in Wisconsin, or have you dipped your toe in spring?
Yeah, we're somewhere between fall and spring. Not winter, but not warm.
Mm. Gotcha. Well, that's a plus. That's a big plus.
Yeah.
It's been crazy here. My grandson gets up in the morning and says, do I have to wear my coat today? Yes, because it's not supposed to go above 55 today. And then the next day, do I have to wear my coat today? No, we're going to be in like 63 or whatever, 60, 62. You know, so I say, no, you can wear a hoodie today. Every day it's like the great, can I wear my hoodie today? Like, I don't know. You know, flip a coin. But, you know, that's just it. Okay, and then we have, on the line, we have Laurent. So hello, Laurent, and welcome to the party.
And this is a special weather update from Western New York. For members of our listening audience, with the temperature this morning, it was a balmy 29 degrees.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's balmy.
So you guys
literally
suck
balmy
egg.
With an R.
Suck an egg.
Yeah, I don't know. I had my share of 29s already this year. Hopefully I won't see any more. Crazy. Yeah, the weather's all over the place.
Well, if I tell you that yesterday it was actually snowing in Canandaigua near the lake. Not a lot, but there were definitely flakes in the air.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I believe it. And the other day you were saying something about it was 100 on the deck. I saw
it
in the room.
Yes, it was 100 degrees on the deck. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, so the temperature dropped, 70 degrees? What the hell?
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah. It's not. That's why we can't get any good weather. Laurent, keep them at all. Both ends of the
No, that wall shouldn't get built between Mexico and the United States. It needs to get built between Canada and the United States to keep the cold air where it belongs.
It'll just wend its way over it.
I was doing a bit from Bill Barr. Sorry. Medium.
That's so funny, though. You know, we all got our own crazy weather. Frank was saying it was so humid down there where he's at. I'm like, yeah, I can only imagine, you know. He was goofing about that yesterday and the day before. Yeah. But he was looking for a palm tree, so. Oh, God. No, so it's just really been something. Where do you go?
Well, here you go. Well, Sapphire's got 55 in Toronto.
Oh, geez, burrs. Well, 50. Well, you know what? 55 is kind of close to me, so I guess I shouldn't be burring too much. You know, we have 55 across, like, you know, all the weeks. But, you know, it goes up a little bit above, stops down a little below. So, yeah. I can relate to that, Sapphire Rose. I can relate to that. Crazy.
Yeah, we're at 40. Wonderful.
Yeah. Let's see.
It'll be 31 tonight.
Yeah. Right, right. Well, look, I guess we should get this party started. And
all right.
See what's happening here. So, Rex, I'm going to ask you to start us off. I'm going to put up this piece by Daniel Gershino.
Okie dokie.
Thank you.
The Raven's Song by Daniel Gershino. What is a name but an audio spark to light the fires of memories? And the raven, poetic protector for the gates of expression, symbolic guardian of the collective, burns as the black phoenix, reborn from legends upon legends, the lightless bird who flies as a silhouette essence among the white lights in the sky. A solitary shadow within the multidimensional world of which the earth-bound only dreams. To dominate the forest that dominates the northern world, hemisphere to fold with ancient wings, with dominance of vocal might of eyesight dominance, with ravenous intellect to host predatory fright, is the ravenous dominance of the raven's flight. End poem. And Pam, why don't we start with you? Unmutate yourself. Damn.
Oh, she dropped.
All right. Well, wow. Well, that was quick. All right, Laurent, we're coming your way.
Well, one of these stanzas, and they're all good, was absolutely remarkable. Burns as the black phoenix, reborn from legends upon legends, the lightless bird who flies as a silhouette essence among the white light in the sky. That speaks to me. It really, really does. The lightless bird who flies as a silhouette essence. It's just really so well written. The dominance at the end is, I don't want to say it's heavy-handed, but I wouldn't have used dominate and dominance and dominance and as quite as much, although as I read it, I'm getting used to it, but it's such a strong piece, a solitary shadow within the multidimensional world of which the earthbound only dream. And I can write, I'm telling you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I think that Dan did a great job with this piece. It was this is actually for the Alpha and Omega tournament that they have going on, and I believe that Dan was the Raven, is the Raven in the contest. So the point is to kind of, I think, introduce the animal, you know, that you are represented by, and what your skill set is and what have you. I'm not 100% sure. If Pam was here, she could tell us, because she's in this. But no, I just don't. I don't have the right words for me. But I think that it's really, it is a very well done piece. And I think Burns is the black phoenix, reborn from legends upon legends of lightless bird, who flies as a silhouette essence among the white light in the sky, a solitary shadow within a multidimensional world of which the earthbound only dream. And you know, I think that right there was just written wonderfully. And then, you know, he gets down into the dominance of and, you know, his strength as an opponent in this challenge. So well done, Dan, and I want to thank you for sharing that with us very much. Yeah, just a well-penned piece.
Well, you're right on that. This is an introductory note with thoughts to whom what the Raven is and what may play out further on down the line when it comes to the whoever he gets matched up for the battle angle. So it's kind of an opening to what the Raven is, plus also notes for wariness, and you got to be aware of what this is, because he hits on some clever notes in here. The lightless bird who flies as a silhouette essence among the white light in the sky, a solitary shadow within the multidimensional world. And then that play with the double dominance or the triple dominance and the double ravenous to finish out, it kind of hits on the note of not just the intelligence, but what the Raven is all about when it gets down and dirty and wants to deliver on its promise of being rekindled once more.
Right.
We're coming back to you.
Okay, okay. Let me hit that button. And I was looking at the comments that Suicide and Aphasiana wrote. So, sorry for being nosy. Now, where is Pam? She has not come back yet. Gosh, dang it. Okay. I mean, she must have known I had the next piece lined up for her, because that's the way it always happens. That's okay. That's okay. I'm good. I'm good. The next piece I'm going to put up is going to be by Weaver of Dreams, and I have an audio for this one, so I'll do it that way. Or words. Here we go.
A cloak of darkness hides me from what I know is waking. I filter out the usual night noises, listen for that other sound. I'm sure I heard it. The noise of feet rustling through leaves, which makes me realize how much danger I'd be in if found.
No. It's not the right poem and the right audio. So let me move on to my next idea. See if I can find one. Yes. And in the meantime, I'll see what I can do here. Wow. This is one of the nights, I'm telling you. Okay.
Maybe the Raven brought in that little portent to the evening's events.
I'm telling you. Is this, like, just not, like, crazy or what? You know,
are you
I
saying it only
swear.
Took us 16 minutes to get into trouble?
Yeah, well, then it takes zero to five. Bam, bam, bam. Quick. Okay. I'm going to do this. So anyhow, yeah. It's Pam's fault because she got me all thrown off here.
I think she did that on purpose.
I think she did. She just wanted to say I was paying attention. You know. I was paying attention. It didn't do me a whole lot of good, but okay, I know exactly where I'm going to go. There we go. Well, there it is. That's exactly what I want. So, let me just put this in the room and there we go. We're going to put Sapphire Roses. Because I know that's right.
Fallen Angels Lost Love by Sapphire Rose. Love seeps through my pores much like a drug in my veins, a collaboration of emotions sheathed in darkness, an understanding unvoiced. Your quiet reserve psychically seduces me, unspoken communication between fallen angels that contort the rules of courtship. Hypnotized by the painful scars spread out across the canvas of your cursed flesh. Let me into your heart to spread my light to the darkest corners of your soul, eradicating the nebulous tether that keeps you incarcerated. Through the murkiness, evil tightens its hold. I call your name, but there was no answer. In the absence of your light, I let the darkness reinforce its grip. End poem.
Great read, Sapphire. Thank you very much for the sound clap. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
This is such a moody poem. It's dark, and it's got some wonderful writing in it. A collaboration of emotions sheathed in darkness and understanding, unvoiced. When you're very, very close to someone, you can collaborate without ever saying a word. Maybe it's the slight body language. Maybe it's an unspoken communication that occurs mentally. And when the other person maintains the reserve, it almost makes you want him more. So the lines, your quiet reserve physically seduces me, makes a lot of sense. The end, I call your name, but there was no answer. In the absence of your light, I let the darkness reinforce its grip. If you're going to write a dark poem, this is as fine as an example as you're going to find, both ways.
Excellent. Great. Thank you very much. Oh, thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Wow, what a great piece. Sapphire, this is wonderful. I loved just how she led into it alone, you know, not even taking anything else into consideration at first. Love seeps through my pores, much like a drug in my veins, a collaboration of emotion sheathed in darkness, an understanding unvoiced. Your quiet reserve physically seduces me. How wonderful. I mean, I think it really suits this image. And as I read further down, I mean, it just draws it in more and more and more, and it really pulls it all together. So it's just a fabulous take on that prompt, and yeah, very much enjoyed it. There's many lines throughout this, but I figure if that was the case, I would just end up reading it again. And I think Sapphire did a fabulous job reading it, so she doesn't need my help in that respect. So definitely wonderful job, and thank you so much for writing for us. That was great.
Great note, you two. I'm going to walk a little different. Since she hits on the note of angels, I'm wondering if this is kind of the where the fallen angel comes in contact, whether it's the angel itself coming into contact with that darkness and finding it alluring, that other side of herself that she's never experienced before. And that's the physicality and the seduction itself. And that thought with the unspoken communication between fallen angels that can talk the rules of courtship, it's on that notion of the idea of those that fell because they adored the women of the earth. So I got to hit on that fact that walks just as well with the other angels who fall for the men. So the thought of cursed flesh is a nice touch, being mortality, but it also hits on the notion of an angel itself feeling that idea, that pull, that drag, and embracing that note because of the all the pleasure that comes with it. So they kind of let that darkness of mortality surround themselves in the moment and take heart to it and really emboldens their spirit, so to speak. How could be done, Sapphire? All right, Jean, we're coming back your way.
Yes. There's always trouble when you come this way, it seems. Let's see now. Got it.
Trouble is your middle name, right?
I think it is. I think it really is. Let me see. Well, what the heck is Hamlet? That cracks me up. I'll beat her up. Okay. Laurent, I'll open the next one up for you. And that's if I can find the room now. It's getting a little tricky around here. There we go.
All right. This is Together by Grant G. Like flowers basking in morning sun, we both hugged warm, becoming one. fingers entwined, smiles deep, spirits ripe, robin tweets. Nature gives us rivers flow, giggles, laughter, make love grow. Cheek to cheek, whispers sweet, thank God, sun and flowers meet. Milk and honey, chocolate too, nature's lovely, I love you. And boom.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, you got first dibs.
Oh, darn, I haven't read it yet. Hang on a second. I was like, the twist in between. You know, I thought this, well, it's a great poem. And this is on the Neruda prompt. I was like trying to pull all my thoughts together. It's lighthearted, this one here. Like flowers basking in morning sun, we both hug warm, becoming one. Fingers entwined, smiles deep, spirits bright, robin sweet. It just is a very lighthearted nature type of poem, you know, combining nature and love. And, you know, that is kind of what Neruda does. And I think that this last line here, milk and honey, chocolate too, nature's lovely, I love you. That is kind of classic Neruda, you know, honey and bread. He has all those things incorporated into his work. And I think that this was a really good a good piece and nicely done. So thank you so much, Graham, for writing for us. It's been a long time since I saw anything of yours, and I'm happy to have this. So thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well said, Jane. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, you got to read. How about you?
Yeah, this is a warm, loving piece. And it's kind of written in a style that reminds me of something, especially the last stanza. And for the life of me, I cannot recall. And it's such a common one, too. Milk and honey, chocolate, too. Nature's lovely. I love you. What is that little rhyme that we hear that has exactly that rhythm? I can't think of it. Blue something? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just not coming to me. But it's kind of written with that style. It's very bouncy. It rhymes really well. It makes you smile. It's a great piece.
You're right. There is something familiar about that last stanza. I can't peg it either.
It's really uncomfortable.
It's the ease of the flow.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of sings with something that that tickles the memory, but it doesn't offer up a full view of the work.
Oh,
you
no, it's roses are red, violets are blue.
Oh, God, yes. Boy, yes. Simplicity. All right, this is sweet, it's endearing, and it hits on that idea of purity when there's full balanced harmonics between two people. And that's a great thing. Nicely done, Grant. Thank you very much. All right, Jane.
Okay, I hit the enter button. We're good for a minute. Okay, let me see what we have. Okay. And this is such an eclectic board tonight. I'm like, wow, what am I reading, and where is it from?
Well,
throw caution to the wind.
Keep us on our toes.
Well, I have no problem doing that. I'm just trying to figure out when I'm picking up a piece, I'm trying to figure out where it's coming from. The next piece I'm going to read. This is by Diane Z, and this is called My Crown Vic Ford, Ford. The popular name says it all. Days I should have stayed put. What's F-O-R-D backwards? Driver returns on foot. My Crown Vic wouldn't die unless I was highway bound. It wasn't just the look of it. Couldn't mistake that sound. My beat up old police car, we used to call her City. People would let me cut in. I'm sure it wasn't out of pity. Maybe. White is my favorite color, so I kept her on the road. Paint-peeling old cop car, the best ride I ever drove. All her dents and metal spots, couldn't keep me at home, I'd buy a deluxe car wash. Then down the lanes I'd roam. The smell of gas was putrid. It even reeked on the inside. But I just kept her shining. 'Twas my rusty, pimped-up pride. Next time you see a cop car, just smile at them and wave. Because if old shitty fails you, it's your life they could save. End poem. I don't know.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. Nice bit of humor in this piece. Laurent, how about you? What'd you think?
Well, I thought this is a very well-realized appreciation of a favorite old car. I mean, I've been there driving it. And the appreciation that you have for something that's taken you places throughout years, it's very hard to give anything up. I like the fact where she says, people would let me cut in. I'm sure it was out of pity. Any car that looks like that, it's about to cut in and maybe tap you if you don't move, you're definitely going to let them cut in because it doesn't mind another dent. I enjoyed her humor in this. I loved it as a Ford driver returns on foot. You know, everybody's heard of Fix or Repair Daily. That's one I hadn't heard. And I like convicts. They drove very, very well. She didn't care about the smell of the gas. She didn't care about the dented mental spots, the peeling paint. Old cop car, best ride I ever drove. Very nice.
Don't forget Foundling Road Dead. Don't forget
yeah.
that one.
Yes, and Fecht on a Raw Deal.
What was that?
Fecht on Raw Deal.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But yeah. I'll tell you what, though. Those Crown Vics they put out for the cops, they were great cars. You couldn't kill them. And that's why they were always picked up when they went on the auction block by somebody. But I'll tell you what, this one has seen some really dark days. It looks like somebody poured Coke or something on that hood because the paint is peeled right down to either the gray primer or almost bare metal. Because if you look right in that center spot in the hood, you can actually see where the air filter goes. Well, anyway, Diane, she played this off really well. That first stanza was funny as hell. And then the drop, and we used to call her shitty. Well, you know what? People still remember those cars to the point where when they had one behind you, hey, they always gave right of way. Hey, road's yours, because they were never sure if it was just a cop car in transit, you know, one of the undercover boys or something that was, all right, it's an old cop car that's been sold out. So they always got the point of road when you got into them. And oh, they were great pieces back in then. I like that the back end of this, she drops in a little more humor. Hey, you smile and wave, because if old shitty fails you, it's your life they could save. A double thought there. Nicely done, Diane. And Jean, how about you?
Oh, I thought it was just, I thought it was a riot. I really did. It was well written. I loved the rhyme and the flow of it. You know, just so many great details provided. You know, I mean, I was grinning through the whole thing. You know, all her dents and metal spots couldn't keep me at home. I'd buy the deluxe car wash and down the lanes I'd roam. You know, and it goes on to smell the gas. You know, I can't help it. I can relate to some of this, really. I really can. I've had a fix or repair daily once or twice in my life. And, yes, I thought it was great. Definitely, it's definitely just a fun read. So thanks, Diane. Great stuff.
Okay. Oh, got somebody sneaking in the back door.
Well, we do. Imagine that. Hi, Pam. It's nice of you to join us tonight. How are you?
I'm good. Everything went out at once. My only form of communication was to wave smoke signals at you. And I figured by the time I started the fire and you saw them, you know. So, sorry about that.
Oh, God. That's all right. I just cracked up. She always knows when she's next because that's when she leaves. I did. I said it. Don't let anybody tell you anything different. Oh, my God. It's funny. So, let me see. I think Rex is trying to tell me it's back to me as well, so I'm just going to ride that wave. Okay, I'm going to... Frank's helping you out over there, Pim.
He is very helpful. That's nice.
Oh, well, where were you when I needed you, Frank? It would have saved me a lot of trouble, right? Oh, my God. I am telling you. Okay, I'm telling you what. I'm going to put up Weaver of Dreams. Poem title is Words, and I believe that I have the correct sound clip for that, or audio, however you want me to say it. And here we go. And if it's wrong this time, well, I can't help it. Here we go.
I see you walking through the park every day, serene, untouched, while my brain seethes with thoughts of revenge, retribution. Tendrils of rotting hatred rise and broil, leaving me weak. Anger this intense wreaks havoc on the body, fractures the mind. At night I plot and plan how to get close to you and what I'd do. Could I end you, swat you like a fly, crush you like a cockroach? Or would a silent poison-tipped dart from a blowpipe be the answer? The thought that my hatred of you...
Okay. Now, you all got to tell me if I'm losing my marbles, okay? That is not the right sound clap. Am I correct?
No. No, it ain't.
Okay.
That sound
clap
is from last night. That's from last night.
Well, whatever it is, it's from the bottom of the poem that I just put up in the room. So, Pam, could I get you to read that for us, hon? I'd appreciate it. I'm so confused.
Sure. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Am I reading the poem Words, or?
Yep.
What?
Oh. Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Thank you.
Then, see here. Words by Weaver of Dreams. And it goes like this. A blinking cursor starts the day, marking each heartbeat, counting down the endless delay between it and a still blank page. Inspiration strikes and an idea appears at last. But wait, is it too generic? Or could this be an original thought? How can it be every plot ever written has been rehashed, reworked by someone somewhere in the past? Putting self-doubt aside, this concept will not be ignored. It's incessant, demanding to be heard. The writer must equisense, or perhaps lose a scintillating narrative forever. At last, the final word lovingly laid down, the now-drained author sighs, reads and rereads. This, the vision, heartbreakingly the outline, is heavy pedestrian. Gone is the sparkle and wit. A finger hovering over the button, marked delete, is stilled. Let's not be over-dramatic or hasty. Take another look. There may be some merit here. On reflection, it might well be a bestseller. End poem.
Great read.
Nice read.
Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Doesn't that line, that last line, absolutely define self-doubt? First delete. Now, let's take another look. There may be some merit. Or it could be a bestseller. That's very, very funny. The blinking cursor. That's my cursor doesn't blink. I wonder how old that computer is. But the thought, is it generic or is it original? I've wrestled with many, many times. How can you tell? After all this time and everything has been written, whether or not a thought is original or the original was simply lost and you're simply recovering it, recreating it. I think it's down to style, because not all styles can be copied. But, you know, putting that self-doubt aside, this concept will not be ignored. It needs to be written down. I just love this piece. Step by step by step, you know, you go from self-doubt to feverishly working back to self-doubt again.
Well, absolutely. Thank you very much. Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was really a wonderful piece, a great expression of thought throughout. You know, I wanted to pull one of the stanzas, you know, but they're all so so nicely woven together in expression. And I think that, you know, as Rolan had pointed out, the last stanza, I do like that. A finger hovering over the button marked delete is stilled. Let's not be over dramatic or hasty. Take another look. There may be some merit here. On reflection, might well be a bestseller. You know, I mean, you go through all those doubts and, you know, even we're writing something short and sweet, like, a poem. You know, you get in there and it's like, oh, I don't know, you know, and then you kind of think, is it good? Should I get rid of that? Should I change it? You know, so, I mean, this is just a little bit on a larger scale because, you know, bestseller is a book. And it just has wonderful, wonderful thoughts throughout. So nice job, Weaver, and thanks for sharing.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Jean. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
I enjoyed this. I think to any creative person, especially a writer, it's very relatable. I like how she says, a blinking cursor starts the day marking each heartbeat. You not only see the movement of the cursor, but it's almost as if it's comparing it to the idea that the writing of the book, the writing of whatever it is, you know, the poem, the book, is the heartbeat, the life's blood of the author. And I like how she goes into the self-doubt and the idea of, you know, is there truly any new ideas out there, or do we just rehash the same things over and over again? And I think many of us can relate to that moment where we almost the delete button and then tell ourselves, wait a minute, don't be overdramatic, don't be hasty. So just an excellent write all the way through, and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. It does bite at that notion that once you are prolific in what you're doing, you do get to that point where you start questioning things, and you get it on that bottom end where you think about deleting or just tossing away a manuscript, and you give it a second look because, you know what, it might be a bestseller just because I don't think it's quite up to snuff, so to speak, to what other bits and pieces they've done is workable. You question yourself because you've gotten to the point where you're expected, and then you start doubting yourself. But that third stanza, putting the self-doubt aside, it's incessant, demanding to be heard. The writer must acquiesce or perhaps lose a scintillating narrative forever. And that next stanza down, I like the humor in the assessment. Heartbreakingly, the outline is heavy. Pedestrian, gone is the sparkling wit. You had a concept started with, and all of a sudden it takes a turn from where you thought it might be because your mind is constantly running and just moving forward with the thought. So better to leave it to the next day and revisit with a clear mind. All right, Jean, it's back to you.
Okay, Joe.
Hey, Rex.
Yeah.
Have you ever deleted anything and then instantly wished you hadn't?
No. I've got books where I can't find half of the stuff I've written, but I go back through them now and then looking for some ideas. But the one thing that did get deleted was because the power went out and the computer went shut off, and it went bye-bye because I hadn't saved it.
Oh, man.
That's
a good one, I bet.
And I liked where it was going at that point, too.
Too funny. Okay, well, Rex, I'm coming back to you. I'm going to give you this piece by Jack Tomkovic.
All right.
Yeah, figure it out from there.
Question of Belief by Jack Tomkovic. I know no man acts on the tales I tell, but I tell them nonetheless. Love and forgiveness are top of the list. the zenith, the Olympus, like saving puppies at pyramid summits, the forgiving of those who slapped and spit at us, burning flesh with cigarettes or on top stovetops, and those cutting with words, wielding them as weapons of war and even mass death, scalding, scaring, swearing, ripping, tripping, all true, but forgiveness still wins, raises the checkered flag, crushes fear and smooths anger's pain, eases, erases stain again, and home. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you, please?
First of all, great read there, Rex. I like the visceral and strong imagery in this one. The forgiving of those who slapped and spit at us, burning flesh with cigarettes on stovetops, and those cutting with words wield them as weapons of war and even mass destruction. You know, it's a difficult thing to forgive those who hurt with both physical actions and words, but it makes you a stronger person to do so. Really liked the emotional impact in this. Anger's pain erases stain again. It's a powerful ending and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jean, how about you?
Well, this is, you know, I noticed that Jack's been writing differently lately, a little more on the, a more serious note, actually. You know, this says it's life, death, pain, love, and forgiveness. You know, there's an awful lot of pain in here for me to be leaning on that forgiveness, you know. But, you know, I guess maybe I'm the one who's really not right, because, you know, forgiveness is imperative in life. And that's, you know, at least that's what they say. You know, I've been pretty good at it most of my years. But there's a lot of real painful thoughts in throughout here. And I found it to be interesting and thought-provoking. It just takes my head in a whole bunch of different directions. And, I guess that's what it's supposed to do, because, you know, that's the way he wrote it. He didn't give us too many details. He just gave us enough for our mind to wander a little bit on each one of these words. And I think it was pretty clever of him, because it draws the reader in, and it gives them something to evaluate on their own and to take places where they needed to, you know, to accomplish, I think, his goal, which is forgiveness, because it says forgiveness and love. What else is there really, you know? Well, you know, that's really the upside of life. And that's the truth, you know, in a lot of ways. So, you know, great job, Jack, and thanks for sharing with us, as always.
Well said. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
You might almost say this has a religious overtones, especially with a title like Question of Belief. To me, the two greatest lessons of Jesus was love and forgiveness. That's what he stood for. Almost the entire life of Jesus was kind of based on love and forgiveness. So without actually promoting religion per se, he's taken those ideas and really amplified them in a more modern voice. But he is right when he says, in the A.N., forgiveness and love, what else is there really? It's a pretty amazing poem. I like it.
Absolutely, and I'll second that. That thought was taking a bit of religious undertones and playing with this way as a kind of a mantra to live one's life. With the act of forgiveness, you can actually move on, and help the other move on a bit, because offering up that tone of forgiveness gives them a little bit of maybe sense of peace in the moment. The thought of forgiveness doesn't always come easy, and is rarely ever given. So the thought of walking that way and living that kind of a life is something to Lord.
Yes. Exalt is a good word.
Absolutely. Well done, Jack. Thank you very much. All right, Jean.
Okay, okay. Oh, shoot. That wasn't what I wanted to do. Does that surprise me? No. I'm really fumble fingers tonight. This is like crazy. Okay, okay, here we go. Yay, I found everything. Frank. Hey, Naomi. Okay. Laurent, I want to put your piece up. I have a lot of feminine voices coming up after this, so we're going to go from there. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Apologies for the piece. It's a monologue heavily based on the title, which is Welcome Wagon. I'm sure you all know what the Welcome Wagon is. But it's a different kind of Welcome Wagon. Fast streets and sidewalks, baby. Come on, get out the car. Throw your heels down. Belly up to that smell. Feel the disease we live with. It ain't oxygen. There ain't no lack of plethora, man. Plethora. Like my word, it's my new one. Loving the way it sounds. Means a lot of, and that's what we've got. Plethora of people, drugs, and disease. Broth, don't worry. Catching nothing, because I won't let it happen. Disease asks me if I can operate this neighborhood. Can I strike so and so? But if I like them, pass, baby, pass. And if I don't, shit, they gone. Don't believe me? Word, baby, word. Don't disbelieve. Receive the word. Don't deny it. Don't fight it. And don't go into arbitration. You'll lose. That was yesterday's new word, arbitration. Found out I was a master arbitrator. Best arbiter there is. I adjudicate disputes. For price, of course, ain't nothing free. One guy got adjudicated to hell. He had no reason to live, best I could tell. Nasty and dirty, and messed up in the head. Found a guy who was better off dead. Got cut to pieces, and I don't mean Reese's. Now, the dude had it right. He was compliant. I had to judge in his favor. I was his savior. Yeah, baby. The neighborhood savior. Last new word, compliant. I mean, do what I say, we'd be okay. Be on your best behavior. We're going to get along. Welcome to the neighborhood, my friend. End reading.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, step on up to the welcome wagon.
All right. So, great read there, Lawrence. I love the laid-back feel to it. I like how you went into the accent, especially at the end. Very cool there. And there ain't no lack of plethora, man, like my word. It's my new one. Loving the way it sounds means a lot of it. You know, I like how it's kind of like this idea of someone showing off in that stanza. You know, something they've learned, they're intelligent. There's a very laid-back feel to this. And the discovery, you know, there's almost to a kind of an innocence to it in the discovery of words by someone who that comes across as learning doesn't seem to be, like, I shouldn't say learning, but, you know, like, not learning. Like, learning seems to be a daily part of their life, but not school type, like, you know, college learning. You really delved into this character and all that they offer up for themselves and for others in the process of learning, but while at the same time still remaining like rooted in who they are. You know, I really like how it has that also that kind of gossipy feel to it that you also oftentimes find in
close-knit communities where everybody knows each other and everybody knows each other's secrets. One guy got adjusted to hell. He had no reason to live, best I could tell. Wonderful dark lines there, and really just creates an atmosphere, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Well said, Pam. Jane, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was a nice workaround. I thought it reminded me of a movie scene. You know, like, you know, the guy comes up to the car, you know, yo, welcome to the welcome mat. Just laid back and very casual. And then he starts throwing out these words. He's like, he's the big man, you know, on the block. And I thought it was a clever use of language throughout in that respect. But, yeah, you know, it's like that, yeah, the show-offy kind of guy, like Pam kind of hit on. You know, like, yeah, I'm the big man, you know, this is me, and, you know, I got this, and, you know, throwing out the big words like it's going to make a big difference in who he really was, you know, in the neighborhood. So it was interesting, but nicely done.
Thank you, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Gene. Laurent, this reminded me of something I just got reintroduced to again recently, and how words can be used effectively, discordantly, and also how they run back in on themselves depending on how you use them within the language that you're playing off of. This walks very much in the same vein of how George Carlin treated language and the way he played with words. You're welcome. All right, Jane, where would you like to go next?
Local bar would be good, but that's not a happening thing. Okay.
G&G. I'm ready for my G&G.
Those are gone.
Only today. You never know about tomorrow. Let me see now. Pam, I'm going to put one up for you. This is by Lyric is Speaking.
Sensual Love by Lyric is Speaking, and it goes like this. I can see the reflection of your body moaning as my words are driving you when they're spoken, flourishing your mind, alertness. Focusing on my expressions, I am undressing you, becoming my sole purpose. Not knowing where I will begin is an anxious desire, intensifying the fire. Admiring your every space for that taste, capturing the look of you, peering from the stare of your eyes. Keep my rise as I whisper that with soothing words. Become so enticing, your body shakes and trembles. I travel, seeing the many ways I can chase, not to miss one place, appetite rising as I gradually pace, transforming the illuminating rapture of passion, igniting explosions, unearthing every part of your anatomy, spilling your ocean's potion. I am hoping with every term I relay any poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much.
Yes.
All right, Laurent, why don't you start us off, please?
Well, with a prompt like Maya Angelou, words mean more than what is set down on paper. It takes the human voice to infuse them with deeper meaning. She jumps right into that. In the first stanza, I can see the reflection of your body moaning as my words are driving you. When they are spoken, flourishing your mind's alertness, focusing on my expressions, I am undressing you. And she takes it in that direction with some wonderful phrasing. And I like the form of the piece, especially from capturing that look of you, peering from the stairs of your eyes, keeps my rise as I whisper that of soothing words. Again, in reference to the prompt. Well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. All right, Jean, what you got to say?
No, I think the piece is nicely done, and I think it is a good reflection of that prompt. You know, I can see the reflection of your body moaning as my words are driving you. When they're spoken, flourishing your mind's alertness, focusing on my expressions. I am undressing you, becoming my soul purpose, not knowing where I will begin, is the anxious desire intensifying the fire. It's interesting, you know. I mean, there is power in words, and the way this is being written is really pretty clever. It's pretty clever. It's a great take, as I said, on that prompt, and I think she did a nice job with it. It's a little, it's interesting. Nicely done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, I thought this had a great rhyme and flow, great wordplay. I like how it's seductive in the way that it brings up how the body reacts to the right words placed at the right time. So just beautifully written and very well done.
Great comments, gang. I got to toss in the number 4 for that thought to the prompt itself and the sensual love and the fact that this works both literally and metaphorically as a piece to that sensual thought. But the play out on the word usage and the inflection of keeping that thought to voice instead of action really sets this apart, something different. I like that. Thank you, Lyric. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Well, the next thing I'm going to put up, the next piece, is by Titus Llewellyn. And I have an audio for this. So let me push that button. There it is. I have it.
Devil take the hindmost. Titus Manlius Torquatus was known for his moral virtue, especially the severity of having his own son beheaded for disobeying his orders for battle. I'll take the blame as devil's advocate to linger on towards that moving blade. Contain thyself some time to allocate all thoughts on pain without it having weight. Prepare thyself, for if I close my eyes and stick my neck out with this I'll be damned approach upon not knowing why, surprise, the weight would be God's mercy if it jams. Fair exchange, the devil take the hindmost whom, without mere regard, shall fate so choose. Discomfort from the giver's point riposte, I'll seek and take a glimpse if I should lose. It is without the use of, some have said, without this mindful worry o'er my head.
Great read, Titus. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Pam, let's start with you.
Yeah, this is a beautifully written sonnet. I like the little tidbit of historical information in the beginning about the Titus Manlius Torquatus. I thought that was pretty cool to learn something new. A wonderful first-person narrative. I like this all the way through. But I have to say the second stanza is my favorite. Fair exchange, the devil take the hindmost, whom without mere regard shall fate so choose, discomfort from the giver's point repose. I'll seek and take a glimpse if I should lose. That willingness to suffer that loss, that willingness to not only suffer a physical loss, but almost it seems comes across as a spiritual loss in order to stand up for what one believes in. I think it's beautifully written and very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Pam. All right, Laurent, how about you?
This is a hugely impressive piece. The language is completely classical in nature. The rhythm and the writing, the flow, is really superb. I love his rhyming. It's effortless. And the second stanza, absolutely my favorite. Approach upon not knowing why, surprise. The weight would be God's mercy if it jammed. That really put a smile on my face. He has this this sly humor interjected almost without your noticing it. It's a beautiful piece.
It is at that. Thank you very much, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, Titus has such a wonderful way of writing. He can write in a classic form, and nobody ever bats an eye. You know, he does it so well. You know, I think he was reincarnated at some point from somewhere, but we'll never know. Well, we will, but we're not going to be around to tell anybody. I've been looking at all the stanzas as well, exactly. You know, I got right into the first one there. You know, I'll take the blame as devil's advocate to linger on towards that moving blade. Contain thyself, sometimes to allocate all thought on pain without it having weight. You know, it just is a great lead into the tale he's telling. And, you know, I mean, Titus always comes up with things. Titus Manlius, I don't know who that is or where that came from or anything about this character in this, but you know, he definitely knows how to tell the tale and you know, not just tell the tale, you know, it makes a big difference. So excellent work, Titus, and great job.
Oh, absolutely, I agree with you. He does tell a great tale in this and in his own language while offering up that thought to both the need to address plus the outcome of that address and how it weighs both on the heart, the mind, and the person itself. But still, he goes ahead with that because it is necessary that he show no favor in particular because the one who disobeyed was his son, and that his word at any moment is to be taken as spake because he is there to lead them as not just their general or anything else, but he's the one that will keep them alive when it comes down to the thoughts of real battle. And that takes some strength of character and mind, not to mention the fact that sacrifice comes along with it too. Nicely done, Tony. All right, Jane.
Okay. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is, you're all ready for this? We're going to have a show now.
Oh, boy.
It's by We
it
Are
must be
All Gonzo. Yep, part three. Part three of Gonzo. So I'm going to hit that button and get us all started. Get us all started. And here we go. Here we are.
The cold stone slab sat flat in the middle of the drab, rat-infested death trap. Lay atop beauty everlasting, grasping for the next breath, rasping, restrained by drastic wraps of plastic. Distant from the edge of a dream, sleepy seemed to hear a conversation between one voice beaming with esteem and another muffled voice boasting of their successful scheme.
I'm not awake.
Unconsciously aware, her subconscious needing repair, she herself found her mind bouncing through memories past highlights of her despair.
I'm not happy about this marriage.
I'm ecstatic.
This day means the world to me.
I promise to always be true.
You know, for a night, you're a real Prince Charming.
My place is at your side, forever.
You two are made for each other. Are you sure he makes you happy?
Yes, stepmother.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, my queen.
I'm sorry. Is this a bad time?
Wake up!
Sleepy sprung back to life, sliding her body to the side, struggling for breath while trying to cry. Heartbeat in her ears joined by a glorious ring, supplementing sounds of the outside world, the tone enveloping.
ripping through the passive restraint before a rush of blood and she began to faint. Sleepy flipped her body over. Frightened, she gripped her knees, curled her body, and pulled her legs closer. Her shivering teeth were chattering and cracked, too little body fat for heat, so no muscles would relax.
Who said that? Where am I?
Dragging a lifeless body slowly over cracks and stacks of cockroach carcasses as darkness intact revealed only grayscale rock and a door without a latch.
Nothing to fear, nothing to fear. Just your most mystical name, the magical mirror. Ah, yeah, I'm awesome. Here, let this crowd cheering for me. Here, this should help.
Rising tall, standing on her feet, her body snapped, contorting, causing anguish and grief. Falling to her knees, no struggle to breathe, she may have been happy had anger not seeped from her core. Every pore forced her into a sleep. Now her eyes finally opened once more, she could see.
Feeling better?
I remember everything.
Good. Now I have something you want.
What could you possibly offer me, except their lives?
The magic mirror winced his cheek, unique as his eyes brightened wide, bearing down his widow's peak.
How could a mirror know?
Magic mirror.
Indeed the truth, a mirrored private eye, unconventional sleuth. Any surface reflective can be home to said detective, from a coin kept collected to the shiniest silver tooth.
You want to know something really funny? You remember Goldilocks, don't you?
Sleepy could barely contain the rage flowing through her veins.
Of course you know Goldilocks, if I'm not mistaken. She shot you and your entire family with... there's three bears, a girl named Red, Jack. I remember Jack was there.
Hands grasped the framed glass, tearing straps and cracking clasps.
Oh, and the Queen was watching. Goldie, that yellow-haired little backstabber and her three fat furry friends who shot your dearly beloved.
Well, they're just below us in the kitchen.
Well, the bears are. She's on her way. If you run fast enough, you might just catch them. Or maybe they'll kill all your loved ones again. Oh, wait!
Sleepy smashed the frame furiously, causing damage quite severe. So much for the mouthy magic mirror.
Oh, no, I'm still here.
Mirror's face scattered across each piece of glass in Sleepy's personal space.
And I'll be watching you.
Give us a good show.
Great read there, Gonzo. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. We really appreciate it. All right, Pam, what you got for number three? Pam? Did she leave again?
Why? No.
Laurent,
I'm here. I muted myself because it was a longer recording and forgot to unmute myself. But yeah, just like the first two, I thought it was very entertaining. I could imagine him at the end when you, with the clippity cloppity of the horses, I just kind of imagined him banging a couple of coconut halves together to make that sound. And, you know, just totally, like, so much fun in the way that he takes well-known fairy tale characters and gives it this wonderfully twisted quality to it. I like the way he's able to, give us a full dramatic effect with the voices and the sound effects. And I think my absolute favorite is... Sleepy sprung back to life, sliding her body to the side, struggling for breath while trying to cry, heartbeat in her ears, joined by a glorious ring supplementing sounds of the outside world. I like that part very much, but an excellent write all the way through.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Oh, yeah. A fractured fairy tale with overtones of Rod Serling and Tim Timothy Leary based it on an audio sound field of eclectic and fascinating effects. It moves the reader from fantasy to reality and back again. It pulls the reader closer and closer to each line as if the world had been tilted and gravity was having its day. Definitely looking forward to the next installment of this magical story.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Jean, how about you?
Okay, well, first of all, I don't think you heard me, but and that's cool. But hello, Gray Eyes. Welcome to the party. Good to have
hey, Gray.
Hi, Bill, Lord, Rex,
hey, Gray.
Good to have you. Did you happen to hear the piece, Gray?
I did, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was epic storytelling, you know. I mean, his SoundCloud was just fabulous, and the whole storyline is intriguing and enchanting. You know, it hypnotizes you as it brings you through all these different scenes, and I thought it was just a fabulous poem.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gray.
Yeah. I have to agree with Gray. You know, it really is, you know, just epic work. I love the production. I like how he twisted the original stories to create this unique work. You know, his audios are always so cool. You know, I'm not sure where he gets all these voices from, but they're definitely well done. And, yeah, it's very cool. So I want to thank you again, Gonzo, for sharing with us. We really enjoy them. And I look forward to the next one as well. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm wondering how he's going to finish out this epic piece because it started out with Red and the Wolf, and we finished off last week's with Snow White, Sleeping Beauty killing off Red in her grandmother's bakery shop, or thought she did until Red showed up to the wedding. Then we hit on this dream sequence here and the mirror angle with the introduction of Goldilocks, the Three Bears, and Jack. This ought to be interesting for a closing out, finding out what's going on. Nicely done, Gonzo. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
Well, I'm coming down the list here, so don't anyone wonder where my head's at, but I'm going to put this piece up by Mr. M. This one also has an audio. And just find it. Here it is.
This is my recital of Pain Shower, a tribute to Chris Cornell's Sun Shower. Blackened thorns, sharp as glass, your so-called healing scarred me again, and still you laugh. My spirit wilts as you step over my ashes. Malignant fingers claw my back. You seep into me with nails pitch black. It stings so deep. It stings so good. Remembering that kiss. But all is well. I am akin to pain. I am prepared for the imminent rain. I am not worried, not for you or for me. We were both lost anyway. In the end, when your wicked thorns have dulled, choking on the seeds you've culled, someday your ashes may merge with mine. Eyes like sorrow, shaped into glass, swirling voids no man can pass. As days march on, you will still age. I am hoping you can turn that page. You may be a beautiful flower, but we both know you can't handle the rain.
Great read, Robert. Thank you very much for the sound card. We appreciate it. All right, Gray, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, you know, I thought he did a wonderful tribute to Chris Cornell with this write. You know, it's dark, it's engaging, but it's beautifully expressed, you know, throughout. Eyes like sorrow shaped into glass, swirling voids no man can pass. As days march on, you will still age. I'm hoping you can turn that page. You may be a beautiful flower, but we both know you can't handle the rain. Yeah. Just a fantastic poem.
Excellent. Thank you there, Granny. Pam, how about you?
First of all, wonderful read that he did there. I like that he wrote this tribute to Chris Cornell, or not Cornell, whoever, yeah, Chris Cornell, that's it, sorry, getting too mixed up. You know, it's a beautiful, emotive write, but I particularly like, I am akin to pain, I'm prepared for the imminent rain, I am not worried, not for you or for me, we're both lost anyways in the end, when your wicked thorns have dulled, choking on the seeds you called. You know, I like the idea there of the suffering the consequences of that, which the actions or choices that you made. And I too also really like the ending that Gray had brought up. You may be a beautiful flower, but we both know you can't handle the rain. To me, there's this whole idea of that strength that is made from going through difficult times in life. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, this is chock full of powerful images and such a strong perception of life within a person. But all is well, I am akin to pain. I'm prepared for the imminent rain. I'm not worried, not for you or me. We were both lost anyhow. Anyway, excuse me. And then when he hits us with those last two lines, you may be a beautiful flower, but we both know you can't handle the rain. The rain is such a strong symbol, and it's used so well in this particular piece. And even the opening, blackened thorns, sharp as glass, those words catch your attention immediately. It's such a well-developed, well-realized piece. It is one of those that I could be deeply envious of.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Laurent. All right, Jean, how about you?
You know, I remember when Robert wrote this piece. It was like moons ago now. It's like 2017. I'm like, oh, my God. Where has time gone? And he wrote it for a Grassman show. And I thought that he had done a wonderful job then. I had gone and looked at the lyrics then, and I thought that he really mirrored it very well. And it was just a nicely done piece. I can't say that I know that much about Chris Cornell's work, but that's definitely me. But, you know, these lines throughout, you know, but all is well. I'm akin to pain. I'm prepared for the imminent rain. I'm not worried, not for you or for me. We were both lost anyway. In the end, when your wicked thorns have dulled, choking on the seeds you've culled, someday your ashes may merge with mine. Just great lines and great imagery throughout. And I think that's what really does it. It's the imagery of the piece. It draws you into the story. But it's a more of a visual, you know, way of running through it. And I thought he did a great job with that. So nice work, Mr. M, and thanks for sharing that with us. Pretty incredible.
Great comment, everybody. So reminds me of Black Hole Sun and how depression walks its way into one's mind and lingers and just crawls across every tidbit of one's soul. And buries itself within, and there is that, you get a little reprieve here and there, but it all comes back again, because he hits on those lines, we were both lost anyway. Someday ashes may merge with mine, this, and then that thought, you may be a beautiful flower, but we both know you can't handle the rain, hits on the thoughts of that song itself, which plays out very nicely. All right, Jean, we're coming back your way.
Okay. Gray, I don't see one on the board for you. Just wanted to know if you were going to put one up. And Pam, the
sure
next one I have. Awesome. I appreciate that. Okay, Pam, sure. Whenever you are ready.
Okie dokie. This is the moonlight ache in the marrow of my being. And it goes like this. There is love here beating beneath my chest, a sense of hope in the early rising thoughts of you, meditation slipping into my ribcage like a piece of starry sky ready to find the whole of me. There is love in my wounds and faith in my marrow. I believe in light. I believe in shadows. I believe the two should entwine, that truth and love will be revealed. My spine dreams of your kisses climbing their way to that parchment on the back of my neck, where you will trace desire with your dandelion breath, and I will make wishes to the in the moaning of your name. Look at me, my love. Study every angle and curve of my being. Then you will know these are not the shoulder blades of a timid woman. They pull themselves back, revealing a soft pool of moonlit ache, ready to feel the fullness of loving you. Gardens grow beneath my flesh, needing to be revealed in the long release of seeds held tight. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, why don't you start us off, please?
I'm sorry. I was totally lost in replying on the last poem. Could you come right back to me, please?
Sure. How about you, Jean? Ooh.
You know, Pam, this... well, he's not here. You're just stuck with me right now. Pam, this was just excellent. A really wonderful take on that prompt. Wonderful, wonderful imagery all the way through. I mean, good God, you know. Oh, my God, you know. It's like, okay, where do I want to go here? This, my spine dreams of your kisses climbing their way to that parchment on the back of my neck, where you will trace desire with your dandelion breath, and I will make wishes in the moaning of your name. How awesome is that? You know, like just wonderful, right, hon? Just really, really well done. And I'm so glad you wrote for that piece. Yeah, for that picture. Nice, nice, nice. Great job.
Thank you,
Great
Jean.
Job, Asma. You're welcome.
All said, Jean. And Gray, how about you?
Well, your talent definitely shines through in this epic poem, Pam. You know, it's filled with fabulous imagery and emotions throughout. You know, you can feel it as you read this poem. My spine dreams of your kisses climbing their way to that parchment on the back of my neck. How beautiful is that? And then these are not shoulder blades of a timid woman. They pull themselves back, revealing the pool of moonlit ache. Just beautiful, Pam. Excellent read as well.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Well said there, Gray. Well, this was most unexpected. Considering the picture, I would have thought you'd gone your typical dark, illusionary bit, but this is bright and airy, and the thought of dandelion breath, that's kind of different. And I agree with both Gina and Gray. You did a great job with this, and it was most unexpected.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I write more to the actual poem itself as inspiration and just added the picture. But I mean, you can see. I think there's little tidbits of the picture within the poem. But thank you very much, Rich, and thank you, Jean, for the inspiration.
Oh,
and Laurent, thank how about you?
First of all, excellent. Excellent poem. You take love, you take hope, you take meditations, you take those emotions, and you begin with them, and then you quote, you write these lines, there is love in my wounds and faith in my marrow. You know, you can't get deeper inside of a person than the marrow, and if that faith is in there, rock solid, there can be love in the wounds, because you can afford to assume that pretty soon there will be no further wounds. You believe in light and shadows. You believe in good and bad. And then you move into the riff off the picture. my spine dreams of your kiss. And excuse me, not that one. Oh, these are not the shoulder blades of a timid woman that pull the snails back, revealing a soft pool of moonlight ache. And moonlight ache is wonderful. Wonderful phrasing. It's a hugely impressive piece, Pam.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Great comments, everybody. Thank you very much. And Jean, it is back to you.
Okay, I don't know where the hell to go now. Pam's got me all, like, lost in space, you know.
What do you mean she doubled the fluster on you twice now?
I'm like, whoa. You know, when Pam writes a sensual piece, boy, she writes a sensual piece. Something that always stops me in my tracks. Just because she doesn't do enough of it. Actually, she does enough of it. That's why. She gets us all going. It's awesome.
Oh, Frank's offering up a beer for that one.
Oh, I'll take that.
There you go.
I'll
there
buy
you
her
go.
A beer.
That's why we yep. Great job. Great job. Okay. I am going, and now I'm going to put up a piece by Argo Wings. So here we go. And I have an audio for that, too. Just full of audios tonight. I feel like I'm bouncing around. Here we go. Ready when you... Yes, I'm ready. What are you doing?
The architecture of us. I count the nights, the hours sometimes, in the quiet darkness of waiting. Go to work, dress myself in wannabe espresso, which falls flat until I smile. Unknown faces don't surmise my incompletion, nor guess that when your sight rests on the lines marring my sleep-deprived visage, it's you who grieves my silent sorrow. Or that this body is mere gossamer, drawn taut across freeze-dried bones until I register the timbres of your voice. You are the portion of myself I nearly lost faith in, bathing in a silky eclipse that spend years devoid of your caress. Let free the threadbare cloths that wreathe our separate bindings and stitch tightly the intricate design of us. Where once were two, let now be one.
Great read, Argo. Thank you very much for the sound grab. We really appreciate it. All right, Pam, why don't you start us off?
Well, this is absolutely beautiful. I like how the main theme is the joining of two people who balance each other out. And I think the title is just perfect, The Architecture of Us, because architecture isn't just about creating something that's practical. It's creating a work of art that does have balance to it. I love this all the way through, but particularly, or that this body is merely gossamer drawn taut against freeze-dried bones until I register the timbres of your voice. You are the portion of myself I nearly lost faith in. That is so beautiful, in the idea that it's not just a physical connection. It's a spiritual and emotional connection between two people who bring out the best in each other. So beautifully written and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you very much. And Gray, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I thought you did a wonderful read on it, and the poem's very loving. And, you know, it's dedicated to the one she loves and their togetherness. And I thought she painted a beautiful picture of that. I count the nights and the hours sometimes in the quiet darkness of waiting. Go to work, dress myself in wannabe expressions, which falls flat until I smile. You know, you can picture this as she read that, which is a beautiful thing. So I thought she did a wonderful job on her poem.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gray. And Jean, how about you? Oh, Jean.
I should have known I wouldn't make it all night without doing it, but.
Hey, I didn't accuse you of mutating.
I did, though. That's exactly what I did. I Usually when I put on the audio, I usually do mute myself. But Pam had said something about the word architecture. And, you know, architecture, you know, is like the, it can be the drawing of a building. It can be the actual structure. And that's what I found in this was the structure of us, you know, that coming together and building something. And, you know, the strength of that building as a union. And, you know, I loved a lot of the lines in this. But I was really drawn to let free the threadbare cause that wreath our separate bindings and stitch tightly the intricate design of it. And that brought an image to mind for me. I know one of the, I guess I can remember which one. I don't know if it's an Irish tradition or what it is, where they wrap a band of cloth, a strip of cloth around the two people getting married, their wrists. And for some reason, those lines brought that image to my mind of this wrapped cloth around the wrist. And I thought, how cool was that, you know, that it would bring that to me in the end of the poem. Beautifully done, really, really beautifully done. You know, this is just really great work. So thank you, Argo, for sharing this with us. This is from a contest a while back based on the Rubus. So just a great piece. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Jean. Thank you. All right, Rob, how about you?
Yeah. Unknown faces don't surmise my incompletion, nor guess that when your sight rests on the lines, marring my sleep-deprived visage, it's you who grieves my silent sorrow. As Pam said, this moves very much in the realm of the spiritual, where we are incomplete until joined with the one we love, where once were two, let now be one. Really first rate.
Excellent. Thank you. Great comments, everybody. I thought the title was a nice touch. The picture is also a great touch to this piece as well. But there's some great lines in here. Dress myself in wannabe espresso, which falls flat until I smile. And or that this body is merely gossamer drawn taut across freeze-dried bones until I register the timbres of your voice. Excellent expression and thought. Use of language to impart heavy feelings. Nicely done, Argo. Thank you very much. All right, Jean.
Okay,
we're coming back your way.
Okay. I'll tell you what. Only because I'm going to grab Frank's piece and put that up. And then I'm going to go back to the other poem. Frank has hung out in the room all night. I'm going to make sure I get it in. Okay, Frank, here goes everything.
A dark old shade, a mystery shrouds the clouds of horrific secrets. Over the old grounds of the soot and grime of the St. Mary's Church, where the piles of snow cover the cold grass of the parches beyond an English garth, and the whispers of evil whistle ruffling the cracking boughs of trees. Deep echoes of a haunting noise reverberate suddenly into the daunting voice of a wraith of an abominable curse. And the blackbirds watch the fainting remnants of daylight fade into the dreaded gloom of the horizon of the blinding morrow. Eagerly, they flap their wings in their haste and departure as the corbins from the cemetery arrive to usher in the night. The image of death and care glow with the glisten of the moon when the hour of midnight strikes and the church bells ring. Through the curtain look on the wandering shuttle that feeds on fear. The columns of the interior church awaken, the crushing dust of legends. Listen for the sounds that shatter the walls that shook the earth. And listen to the ghastly breath of the red hue of blood and burning fire.
Great read, Frank. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is really appreciated. All right, Gray, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, you know, he did a fantastic job with his SoundCloud, and the poem is amazing. You know, it's very dark, and it carries that darkness straight through to the end. Through the curtains, look on a wandering shadow that feeds on fear, the columns of the interior church awaken the crushing dust of legends. Listen for the sounds that shatter the walls that shook the earth, and listen to the ghostly breath of the red hue of blood and burning fire. Aha. Yeah, fantastic job, Frank.
Thank you, Gray. And Pam, how about you?
Well, first of all, I liked the whispery voice he read it in. This is a very epic tale, and I like that he takes us back in time almost with the use of the imagery, the old St. Mary's Church. And I like the use of imagery and the use of movement. Eagerly they flap their wings in their haste and departure as the corbins from the cemetery arrive to usher in the night. And then through the curtains looks on a wandering shadow that feeds on fear, the columns of the interior church. I like how he brings us into this haunted church, into this church of almost like a realm of evil. So just a wonderful dark light and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Through the curtain looks on a wandering shadow that feeds on fear. The columns of the interior church awaken the crushing dust of legends. That I thought was splendid. Listen for the sounds that shatter the walls that shook the earth, and listen to the ghastly breath of the red hue of blood and burning fire. This is Victorian horror poetry at its finest. I mean, it's right up there with any of that era's poets who wrote in the genre. It's pitch-perfect darkness, rendered so eloquently and expertly on the SoundCloud, and the imagery is in high definition.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. All right, Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, as always, Frank does, you know, a wonderful job with his audio. I think the tale was well-written. I like the imagery all throughout, you know, and I thought, you know, as always, it was just a great job. And I want to thank Frank, you know, for sharing with us. You know, he's pretty consistent with sharing with us. I can't tell you how many audios I have of his because it was kind of surprising today. But definitely a job well done, Frank, and thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Great comments, everybody. I like the gothic undertone in this. It hits on that notion of late 19th century where things were just coming out a little bit more on the darker note. She had Frankenstein earlier in that century, and then at the back end, Dracula was born. And this opening here is really a nice touch to getting into something a little creepy and beyond, something to get the hairs on your arms standing on end as you read the story. I like that thought with the snow covered, the cold grass of the patches beyond an English garth, and the whispers of evil whistling, ruffling the cracking boughs of trees. Nice touch there. And dropping in the coal bins from the cemetery is another ushering in the night, image of death and terror glow with the glisten of the moon. Nice striking tones of eeriness, which play out very well through the mind with its imagery. All right, Jean, we're back to you once more.
Well, the next time I'm going to set up this for Gray Eyes. Gray, whenever you're ready, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Phil. So this is For a Moment by Gray Eyes Samantha. Long has man stood in the face of a gale, stubborn in his need to be master of all things, watching a bird soar upon the winds. He builds a machine and gives it wings. Yet with a sudden gust of her breath, the machine tumbles and man falls to his death. He stands upon her shore, writes books of the mighty whale and its in all its lore. So he built a boat and sinks to the depths a whale has never been before. For a moment he is the master, until pressure so great collapses his boat, bringing in another disaster. Then conquering the moon, thought his victory was permanent, and how he did swoon, until his rocket exploded and popped like a balloon. Undeterred, he built a house in the stars, and in it he stirred. He dreamt of conquering planets beyond, as a minnow might dream of being the fish in life's great pond. Though in the lessons history has taught, I think this too will all be for naught. With an ego so fat, you come to nature with all your theories, and she knocks them all flat. Renoir, end poem.
Great read, Grant. I like the fact that you dropped Godzilla, Blue Oyster Cult, in the bottom as a nice backdrop. Excellent. All right, Laurent, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, Gray expertly picks out moments when we aspired to certain things and we're promptly put in our place by circumstances, by nature. The gust of wind that knocks the airplane from the sky, the boat, the submarine that implodes, the Challenger that exploded in midair. And now he's built a house in the stars. And in it, he stirred. He dreamt of conquering planets beyond, as a minnow might dream of being the big fish in life's great pond. And then, of course, the inevitable, he quotes Renoir, you come to nature with all your theories, and she knocks them all flat. That's a great realization of that quote. I really liked it.
Thank you, Lauren. I appreciate that.
And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this one. I find it funny that I actually didn't comment on it because I did put it on my poems I think are awesome list, so it just surprised me. But I didn't comment on it this time. And what I really liked about this, well, first of all, it had a really nice flow to it. It's strong imagery. I really like how the main message of this is how man develops almost like a god complex and gets that ego that becomes overblown, not only wanting to be in charge of everything, but feeling like they've reached that point of being in charge of anything. And then, you know, along comes Mother Nature and with a 1-2 punch and kicks them in the ass and says, no, you're not in charge of everything. And I think the way that you bring out nature's voice in this to be a representation of not something that is always just sweet and nice, but rather a powerful force willing to put mankind in their place. So very well done, Gray.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Pam.
And Jean, how about you?
You know, Gray, I liked this the last time, the first time I read it, the first time I heard it, that's it. I knew I had a way of saying it. And I thought you did a great job with it. And I have here that, you know, I thought you nailed the prompt. And now I'm looking at him going, is the prompt the last line? You come to nature with all your theories and she knocks them all flat by Renoir? Because I'm like, okay, where is that prompt? So at the risk of sounding really silly, I think that that is it. And I, you know, I still believe you did a great job with the poem itself. Wonderful imagery and thought throughout. So great job. And I appreciate you sharing with us tonight. God, I'm telling you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome.
Great comment, everybody. Gray, you hit on notes of greatness and then the destruction that comes with that because of things off go awry. The thought of reaching to the sun with feathers and wax that builds the wings, yet you fly too close to that sun, melts the wax, and you fall, or you come tumbling down. And the thought of the Moby Dick in here, I thought you hit this with a twofold thought. For a moment he is the master until pressure so great collapses his boat, bringing another disaster. I thought you hit that note on Moby Dick, but also the Titanic as well. And then the conquering of the moon to rock exploder hits on the Apollo 1 plus the two shuttles. And then you drop in Godzilla. There's a couple of great lines in that song itself. Again and again, as nature points out, the folly of man, which is a great thought in that of itself because you use the song as the bottom end of your piece.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. All right, Gene. What you got there?
Well, I have one. Pam, would you read this one for me, please?
Absolutely.
Awesome sauce. Thank you.
All right. Smoke me by Jessica D. I am smoke, rolling particles of perverted filth, placing carbon kisses on saddened canvas, digging deep with vapor claws, latching. I'm the smudge on your writing, the crease of your favorite page, the whisper of your unstill lips, the moisture too. I am the dirty stain on your skin, the bruise on your lips, kissed until they erode, caving to my sick libido. You are sunlight filtered through deciduous leaves, our feet trampling their fallen kin, hand in hand and foot in foot. Your braille journey chases my obscure core, dragging me screaming into the light of your halogen smile. My scorched eyes drink you deep, exposed in camera flash, drawing coarse sap, volcanic trends hiss, steam in showers, and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Greg, why don't we start with you, please?
Sure. She had really vivid imagery in this poem. And, you know, the poem is, it has great flow and it really, you know, takes you along in this journey of her being the dirty stain on her skin, the bruise on your lips kissed until they erode, caving to my sick libido. It's a fantastic poem.
Absolutely. Thank you, Greg. Laurent, how about you? Laurent, are you there?
Yeah, chattering away to my new friend, Mute. Okay. This is pretty powerful stuff. I'm the dirty stain on your skin, the bruise on your lips, kissed until they erode, caving to my sick libido. And, of course, she is the sunlight. It's such a contrast. I love your braille journey. Chases my obscurial core, and it's a steamy right in its own way. Volcanic trends, its steam in showers. It seems to be such a well, you know, he he calls himself, a loiling particle of perverted filth, the smudge on the writing, the dirty stain on the skin, and you know that, and all of a sudden you are sunlight filtered through deciduous leaves, and it changes, but it is such a strong contrast in those portions of the poem.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
A really wonderful piece. It's very dark in the beginning, you know, with all the deep, dark images that Jess had penned. And then she moved into, you are sunlight, silver through deciduous leaves, our feet trampling their fallen kin, hand in hand and foot by foot. Your brow journey chases my obscurial core, dragging me screaming into the light of your halogen smile. You know, my scorched eyes drink you deep, exposed in camera flash, drawing coarse sap, volcanic trends, hiss, steam, and showers. She goes from just one set of imagery and turns it into another set of imagery, completely opposite of one another, at least I think. Just a really, really well done piece, you know, for the contest. I have to assume that she used the image as the prompt and not the poem. I could be wrong, but I think it's the image because it seems to fit that very well. So excellent work, Jess, and thanks for sharing with us tonight.
Great comments, everybody. As wonderful as those last three stanzas are, the top three are even better because they're stark, they're dark, they're colorless, which gives you such great imagery of smoke, roiling particles, carbon kisses, vapor floors, dirty stain, and sick libido. It hits on such a singular cast of grayness and darkness itself. And then that fourth stanza walks into sunlight a bit, who the opposite is. And then it's almost a kicking and screaming moment being brought into that realm of light and finally enjoying the moment itself. Very well done. Thank you, Jessica. All right, Jean.
Well, I don't think that I should dare to put up another piece, only because it's so, I mean, we only have 2 minutes left. So I'd like to thank everyone who called in tonight. I'd like to thank Gray and Laurent and Pam and Rex. Thank you for co-hosting with me as always. Thanks to everyone who hung out in the room. Really appreciate it. Frank and Sapphire Rose and Naomi. And I'm sure my brain is fried, so I'm not sure if it's going to be. Hopefully not. And later tonight we have Part Sinner, Part Saint with Ephesiana and Babbler. And hope some of you, will call in and keep them company tonight. Thank you, Gonzo. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Poetic Picasso. You're reminding me. My
great
dream.
Show, Jean. Have a nice night, everybody.
Thank you. You do the same. Everybody take care. Thanks a million.
Good night, everybody. Much love.
Good night. Bye-bye. Oh, thank you. And he's like, really, you know, being all like, I said, I didn't put your name.
I saw that, and I said, I don't remember seeing that before. Okay.
For some reason, you went off of mute, but you are not now. So I, well, I know what it is because I created the shows in advance. So once I do that, the links are locked in. Like they create the links. And, when I changed the name, it didn't change it. It just kept it the same. So he thanked me, you know, oh, thank you for putting my name back on. I said, I didn't put your name back on it. It was so abrupt, I just felt really rude by saying it that way. I said, I didn't do it. I said, that's just the way it is because I made the shows up in advance. I said, I just want you to know I didn't do it because I didn't want him getting any kind of ideas that he was going to then, you know, move back in because I'm not having it. And anyway, he was like on there with me. Hand me on the phone for I don't know how long. It felt like forever. God. And all I was doing was being very nice, but I was being very, like, I don't know how to express it. I wasn't, like, fully engaged, you know, and I'm pretty sure he knew I wasn't fully engaged with the whole idea. Yeah, I was like, oh, my God, you know, really? This morning it ticked me off because, well, of course, he showed up this morning, you know, because we get the early morning, good morning. It's when I've gotten in 2 years, you know, and he said something to me about Naomi. She was putting up reminders for the show on Wednesday, next Wednesday. I'm surprised, Naomi, like you. I said, what are you talking about? You know, so he quotes that she's like handling for the show, right? And I said, yeah, and? Oh, he says, you must be getting soft. Ho, 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 ho. No, I'm not getting soft, trust me. Like, if anything, you should know I'm turning into, like, freaking steel. He says, oh, well, I said, why would I get upset? It's our show. You know, it's an LNP show. What are you talking about? Anyway, he's I don't understand. And I wanted to say, you don't fucking need to understand. You know, like, oh, God, Gene, just chill. Because I was ready for a knockdown, drag out kind of thing, you know? I didn't need the silliness of it, you know? Say to me, because it was like, who are you to question me? You know? You didn't,